going? Yeah, it looks like you're going.
I think we're... Are we on? Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm sorry, Gout. Yep. I'm sorry about that, guys. I'm sorry we're a few moments late. We had a couple of tech issues. For whatever reason, StreamYard decided not to connect either to DLive or RadioAlbion.com. But hello and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode 72. And I'm getting serious deja vu now because I've done this before about 7 minutes ago. We are live eventually on DLive and RadioAlbion.com. And if you haven't discovered RadioAlbion.com, you should do, because it is an excellent website run by my good friend Sven Longshanks. He puts a huge amount of work into that site. It's full of amazing nationalist content. Make sure you've got it bookmarked. And if you're ever starved of excellent content, head on over to Radio Albion and watch as much as you can, because I think there's enough there to keep you satisfied for a lifetime. Now, if you miss one of these shows, or if you only happen to watch bits of tonight's show and you want to see the rest for whatever reason, head on over to BitChute, because all the replays of Patriotic Weekly Review are available on BitChute, as is my entire library of previous little short informative videos. They are no longer available on YouTube, but you can find them all in their uncensored form on BitChute. Please support these alternative platforms, because they are so important to us as a group, our movement, to us as individuals, because otherwise we couldn't produce shows like this and we couldn't connect with the community. Now, if you want to contribute to this show, you can contribute first and foremost via Entropy. Now, the Entropy link has been posted in the live chat when I thought the stream was working, but it wasn't. And I think I saw a few people thinking the show was off. Well, I haven't missed a show in what totals 172 episodes over two different shows, so I can say with quite a lot of confidence that we will always be here or always be doing a stream in some form. I can assure you of that. And there is the Entropy link in the live chat now. It is also on my Telegram and it's on my Twitter. So go on over to Entropy if you want to make a contribution. And there are two ways you can contribute. You can contribute financially, you can give a donation, and any statement made with a donation is read out live on stream. Or if it's a question, the question will be asked to the panel or the relevant member of the panel. That is very important. Now, also, you can ask non-paid questions. And non-paid questions are voted upon by the audience. So if you're on Entropy now, you can vote on the questions. The best questions go up, the worst questions go down. And we ask the best non-paid questions every week as well. So if you want to contribute either financially or with a question, use Entropy. You can also donate to me via Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is available on my BitChute, or you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com and I can give you bank details if you wish to make a bank transfer, or if you wish for my Bitcoin address or wish to contribute in other ways, or just ask me a question. Well, that's the usual stuff over and done with. Now, a few weeks ago, I told you I was lining up a debate with a member of the Black community who wants to talk about Black Lives Matter, who wants to talk about the way forward for multicultural America and multicultural Europe, and see what we as white racial nationalists think is the future for our people. That will be happening not tomorrow, but next Thursday. Jason will be hosting and moderating. It'll be available in a number of different places. I am really looking forward to that. The guy who is the guy I'll be debating is actually quite a nice guy. I've been chatting to him a little bit. He seems really pleasant. So I think it'll actually be quite a productive chat. And I hope we actually end up finding some common ground. And one of the small announcements before I go over to our excellent special guest, well, actually, we'll be going over to Jason first, is that White Art Collective are on DLive directly after this show. Now, please do support White Art Collective. They are absolutely fantastic people. After this show, they start streaming at 9 p.m., but you should be a little bit late because this is now going to run over because of the technical issues. But as soon as this finishes, switch over to White Art Collective. Now, without delaying this any further, Jason, what have you been up to this week, my friend? And who is on tap?
Well, tap is going to be, I believe, on Friday. And we'll see, though. Maybe. And it's I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name. Charles is coming to mind, but the rest of his name is leaving me at the moment because I am so elated. I just found out just this morning that my new book, Crucible, Child Patriot, American Victory, is now finally available. It's time to get off to the races, ladies and gentlemen. I'll drop the link in the live chat for those who would like to check the book out. Everybody knows who have been participating in Going Free, the Going Free shows that we do, and our community and service to white well-being knows that now is the time. This is the book that we are going to use to get to the MAGA people, to get to the millions of our brothers and sisters in the United States. The groundwork is being laid. The book is now available. Let's make sure that we push with all of our might from here until and past Election Day so that all of these many, many, many millions of our brothers and sisters can finally be brought over to some lexicon dialectics that will serve them, and then a percentage of, and therefore all of us, and then a percentage of those brought over to Going Free Improper, and we can really make a change here in the United States of America and indeed around the world. I'm so very excited about that today, and it is splendid to be with Hector and all of you in the live chat, and I am just thrilled to be here with Mark Collette and all that he's having to deal with technical difficulties and dealing with the world as it is, but ready for the show, and let's move forward, brother. I pass it right back.
Yeah, I do like my technology, and I do like having a beefy PC, but I'll tell you this, when things go wrong, it does enrage me to a huge, huge degree. And what makes it even worse is when you've bought a decent PC. Like if you've got something that's sort of 6, 7, 8 years old and it's on its last legs, you realize that you've got to give it a bit of TLC to keep it going and keep everything functioning. But when you actually buy a new PC and then things still keep going wrong, that really does get my rage-o-meter boiling over. So let's go to our guest, because this is certainly going to cheer me up. Now, this is Hector. He is a member of Action Zealandia. These guys are amazing. If you don't know who these guys are, you're in for a real treat tonight. These are ethno-nationalists from New Zealand. Now, when we did our White Lives Matter Day of Action, it was an amazing day. And the contributions from all over the UK were absolutely fantastic. And they filled me with happiness and hope for the future. But one particular entry really made me smile, and it was these guys down under. To see people contributing to our White Lives Matter Day of Action all the way over in New Zealand was absolutely superb. Now, after these guys made touch with me, I appeared on their podcast. It was an absolutely fantastic show. I think I spent around 2 hours with them chatting about various different topics, mainly my experiences in nationalism, some organizational tips for the best way to structure organizations and the kind of people you want to attract if you want to build something that lasts. It was an amazing show. And I really suggest that if you haven't seen that, I'm sure Hector will give a link to their website or places you can find these guys. I suggest you listen to that and you give these guys some support. They are doing amazing work. They are the only pro-white ethno-nationalist organization in New Zealand. So without further ado, here is Hector. Please, my friend, take the mic. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your group, and how we can find you and how we can contribute to your amazing work.
Howdy, Mark. Thanks for having me on. Very good intro. I wasn't expecting that much of a, I'll just get back into it. Well, basically, I'm from Action Zealandia, a little bit starstruck, sorry. I've been watching this show for pretty much since the beginning, and I never expected that I'll be on here. Basically, I'm from Action Zealandia. We're the only ethno-nationalist organization in New Zealand. We're pro-white. We take part in pro-white activism. We take part in banner drops. We take part in postering. We take part in all sorts of things, you know, self-improvement, hiking. Our core membership is of males, young males, basically, between the ages of 18 and 35. But we have also a official supporters network, people that want to take part regardless of their age or gender. You can find us on Twitter, at Hail Zealandia. You mentioned the White Art Collective as well. They're quite good. They've done our rendition of our movement anthem, All Hail Zealandia, and we are very appreciative of that. And yeah, on the topic of that White Lives Matter banner drop, it was just good because for a while it felt like there wasn't that much going on in the UK, and we were very excited when you guys announced Patriotic Alternative. And we're very happy to take part and do some banner drops in solidarity with you guys. It just felt like the least we could do for our sort of ethnic kin, I would call it. But yeah, I mean, yeah, sweet. Okay. But yeah, basically, yeah, we've taken part in banner drops. We did that one in solidarity. We're happy to do it. And we're going to continue partaking in activism of that nature, banner drops, all that sort of thing. And if you want to get involved, go to our website, action/dillandia.com, all that sort of thing.
Okay, thank you. Well, we don't usually do this. We don't usually go to questions first, but there has been an excellent question asked for you by Etheronium. He said, can you give us a brief rundown on how and why Action Zealandia was formed, and what are your goals for the short and long term?
Oh, excellent question. There was basically a purging effect after the shooting in Christchurch, as you might imagine. There was a couple nationalist organizations that were sort of around, but the leadership wasn't really had their heart into it. After the unfortunate shooting happened, the police started knocking on people's doors and people were being harassed, that sort of thing. And the current leadership just completely folded. And Action Zealandia formed of a core group of activists that were part of these organizations, but they weren't in any sort of leadership position. So after these organizations collapsed, a core group of members got together and we said, okay, what do we do from here? There's no nationalist, there's no people speaking for the white Europeans anymore. What do we do? So we got together, formed Action Zealandia, and we've been going for about a year.
Excellent. Well, we do wish you all the best. And I think it's fantastic that out of the ashes of these previous movements, you guys have come together, you've raised the banner, and you're starting doing something. Because one thing I always find really, really interesting about New Zealand is it's one of those places that white liberals hold up as an example of how terrible white people are. It's one of those places that white liberals say, well, we went to New Zealand and we took that country from the indigenous people, the Maoris. And what I find really interesting about that is the Maoris only arrived in New Zealand from around 1320 to 1350, which makes the Maoris far less indigenous to New Zealand than white people are indigenous to Europe. In fact, we have a much greater claim to Europe than the Maoris do to New Zealand. But it is one of those examples where liberals gush over a so-called indigenous people that aren't actually really indigenous to those islands. And I wanted to ask, do you guys get a lot of pushback being white advocates in New Zealand because of the Maori presence?
Oh, that's interesting. I actually didn't know that was the perceptive of New Zealand from our sort of liberal friends overseas. But basically, it's sort of interesting, isn't it, that you've had the Maori that came here in the 1500s and then the British arrived a couple hundred years later. I mean, people like to go, oh, you know, the Maori, you know, they were the foundation of this country. But really, I mean, it's a bit harsh, but historically, Maoris are just a bunch of tribes. They weren't really that united, and they sort of just went to war with each other, killed themselves on massive scales, and sort of ate each other as well. The cannibalism was a massive part of their culture at the time. Basically, we do get some pushback, but we sort of just partake in guerrilla activism and guerrilla politics. So we don't do anything that we can be pinned down for example. Is, you know, we don't organize these massive rallies. We're like, everyone come, we're going to do this biggest nationalist event in human history in New Zealand. And then you get the police and Antifa just try to arrest everyone, and Antifa throwing, you know, bottles of piss at you or something like that. But basically, we partake in guerrilla activism, and we do our activism targeted at the general public to build that, I guess you'd call it, a racial consciousness between white people, which has been very lacking in New Zealand. So we take banner drops, postering, like I said before, public-facing activism, while also building community within our own membership.
Excellent. Now, I don't usually read things out from the live chat, but if I say cook the man some eggs, do you know what I'm referring to?
Yeah, I get that. I guess I didn't realize there was a cultural export as well.
The film Once Were Warriors is a massive, massive cultural export from New Zealand. It's probably one of the most famous things here. I think it's actually a fantastic film, and I have a very different interpretation of that film to what liberals seem to think. It's a huge thing about toxic men and feminism. I, on the other hand, believe it's more about what happens to a tribe of people when you take away their identity and replace that identity with cheap beer and state benefits. I think it's a very, very important film on many levels. And it's also very, very well acted. But I just wanted to bring that up because it amused me in the chat that somebody had brought that up so early. And also, I do think it's a really, really good film. But let's move on to some of the news here. And I'd like your takes on it, and obviously Jason's as well. Now, the biggest news item at the moment that people are discussing here, and we were going to talk about this last week, but things have intensified a lot, and I'd like everyone's take on how this is affecting them in their country, is the COVID-19 situation. Now, when we went into this lockdown, I could swear the government said we were going to go into a lockdown that was going to last 1 or 2 months. And we've never really come out of that first lockdown. In fact, the government's furlough scheme is still in full swing. Well, not in full swing, a reduced swing, should I say. It's 40% of people's wages at the moment. But the furlough scheme is still operational. We were told that by the 1st of October, that would be ending, that things would be going back to normal, that large businesses, conference centres, hotels, exhibitions, everything was going to be reopening. But before we're even out of this first lockdown, we are being told a second lockdown is now inevitable that will go on to at least Christmas. And certain government experts, in inverted commas, are already saying, well, it's not going to be Christmas. It's going to be well into spring next year before anything changes. And the government is also recruiting a large number of people as COVID officers who are going to be basically like a politicized Stasi force that go out there and clamp down on people who are breaking the rules. They are talking about £10,000 fines for breaching certain rules, £200 fines for not wearing face masks. And the other day I had the distinct displeasure of being on cross-country trains. That's a train service that goes down to the southwest here in England. Absolutely scandalous. They were putting about 10 people per carriage. They were charging up to £244 a ticket for a single ticket and threatening people with a £3,200 fine for not wearing a face mask. I don't know how they came to this £3,200 figure, but they did. But things seem to be getting really, really crazy again. And I think now is the time that we start to push back. I've been working hard on an anti-COVID lockdown leaflet, also a leaflet about white people becoming a minority in Britain. I've been working on those two leaflets. They were the two most requested leaflets. They should be out very shortly. But I think it's time we started to push back. And I think the lies the government is spewing right now are unbelievable. The fact that this lockdown was meant to be 2 months, but instead of 2 months, we are now heading into, because it started in March, we're heading into October, and they're saying, look, it's going to be going to spring. I don't think they're ever going to let us go back to normal. I think they are prepping us for something much worse. I think that our rights are going to be taken away. And if we don't do something now, if we don't start to reach out to people, if we don't start to push back, we are basically going to be ceding our entire, all our liberties to the government. What do you think about this, Hector? What's the situation like in New Zealand? Are you guys doing anything to push back down there? Because I heard that your prime minister, that insane woman, she locked the whole country down because of single-digit cases. What's the situation at the moment? And how are the people in New Zealand coping with this? Are they pushing back? Are they getting sick of the legislation, or are they going to just take it lying down?
That's interesting you mentioned that, because yeah, we did have the, well, basically we were supposedly we beat the virus, as our government and all the media was espousing nonstop that New Zealand was the one country to beat the virus. And then the government opened up the borders and let it back in. It's like, what's going on there? And yeah, we basically got one case, and then the entire biggest city in New Zealand, Auckland, was shut down for 3 weeks, I believe. And it was, I mean, well, it's just silly, isn't it? You've got, what, three cases, and you've locked down your largest city in the country. There was a lot of pushback. There was this little more sort of kosher right groups that were doing these anti-lockdown protests, but largely these sort of things were ridiculed in the media. The media and the government in New Zealand has a very sort of, I guess you'd call it an aligned agenda. It seems like the media sort of props up Jacinda Ardern quite a lot. And yeah, most people here, unfortunately, just eat that shit up. Well, eat that up, basically, that Jacinda is some basically godsend that saved New Zealand from coronavirus. But it turned out, well, it turned out in the end, what, coronavirus is hardly more lethal than just normal flu. And well, basically, yeah, we locked down an entire country. We had the two lockdowns. We had the first one that lasted 5 weeks, and then the second one, which lasted three. And I just don't understand how we beat a virus and then they open up the borders and just let it back in. It's all a bit silly.
What's your take, Jason? How are things in America? Because I would say that Trump, more than any other world leader, has pushed back against the coronavirus narrative and has tried to actually battle the media and has done his best to say, let's get things moving again. He even seemed to be opposing face masks for some time. But I've noticed the Democrats are truly, they have Trump derangement syndrome, but they also seem to have COVID derangement syndrome as well. And they seem absolutely desperate to shut America down. And I think some of that is actually motivated by the forthcoming election in November. I think that the Democrats want things to grind to a halt to harm President Trump's chance of re-election. What's your take on this, my friend?
Well, that's really what it's all about. All of these sorts of things, it's called nervous exhaustion. They're trying to achieve a state of nervous exhaustion in the population because of the ability that that then gives them to come to the individual who is having this, and this would be, you know, generally talking about the body politic, is in this state of near nervous breakdown, of near collapse, of near surrender in all ways. And they then become much more open to the suggestions that anti-whites can make to them. And the anti-whites who call themselves Democrats, they control all of the media, of course. So they have a little bit, their control, I guess, is diluted a bit. It's still anti-white, but it's not as anti-white as the other networks with some of the commentators, that is, on Fox News. But since they have such a monopoly, they know that if they are able to achieve a state of nervous exhaustion, and they can do this through many means, the destruction of our cities. And right now we have this Louisville here in the U.S., and I don't know if you're going to want to talk about that at all tonight, but the police officers who were charged or who were under investigation are not going to be charged with the death or the wanton death of the individual that they ended up shooting in that case.
And just cut in there a second, Jason, just in case people are unfamiliar with that case, is that the one where the guy was getting into his car and they told him not to get into the car, not to go for his weapon, and he went for it?
No, this is a Brianna something or other, and she was at home. The law enforcement had a no-knock search warrant, and the reason they have such things is because there is a legitimate threat that the individual or individuals inside are ready, prepared, and willing to kill the police officers when they arrive. They entered the housing unit, and Breonna Taylor, that's right, somebody just shared the name. And I don't know, of course, the details. I don't know if anybody really knows the details of exactly what took place inside there, but rest assured that law enforcement would have bent the rules as far as they could to be able to prosecute and charge these individuals with some sort of manslaughter or something of this nature, and so that they could prevent what now is already beginning to happen in the United States as a consequence of this. Remember, it's always none of these cases are worth even looking at individually, because there's always going to be an endless excuse to behave this sort of way. And this is the natural evolution of anti-whiteism in our societies. Back to the question, the anti-whites who call themselves Democrats, they're going to use every means by which to instigate this nervous exhaustion in the population, so that they can then say radical steps need to be taken because these are extraordinary times, the XYZ, whatever that might mean, that they geld Trump so that if he wins, then he won't be able to function as a president, or they actually get the population in such a state of nervous exhaustion. Of course, that would be the hope, that they could get Biden elected. I don't think there's any chance in hell of that, unless the Republicans are unable to get their nomination confirmed for the Supreme Court of the United States. So COVID-19 is what it is. It's a real thing. It is used by anti-whites who call themselves Democrats as a cudgel against Trump and against the rest of the population, to induce the state of nervous exhaustion, to wreck the economy that he has, almost single-handedly has built and then recovered. And they're trying to wreck it further. And for the purpose, as I said, of being able to take steps that otherwise would be just outright objected. Now, we have situations here where they lock down places. It's very interesting. They lock down, as New Zealand did, and they have those cases, those places have some of the worst numbers for COVID-19. In other words, the most people infected, the most deaths. And remember, the actual the infectivity of COVID-19 is quite high. The R naught is quite high. It spreads very easily. Many people, of course, we know don't show symptoms, but others just die from the thing within days. Of course, we had Simon. I have a very close personal friend who has had COVID-19, in great shape, this individual, and young, and a runner, and 7 months, and nearly 100 days in hospital, in ICU. So it is a real thing that for some people is quite dangerous and deadly. And yet, these kind of steps that they're taking are not the appropriate steps. They're driven by politics, and even institutions like the CDC, which the whole world listens to, and the WHO are motivated by anti-whiteism to come to conclusions that harm Western kind and Western civilization. So we can't even grapple with a clear picture of what's taking place. But the real thing to mention here relative to both of these, and I'll hand it right back, these issues, the rioting, the destruction of Western civilization, that's ramping up again right now because a lynch mob, and let me just say in COVID-19, because a lynch mob of these anti-white animals, both white and non-white, have demanded the blood, have demanded the deaths, have demanded the execution of white males who were doing their job and the role of police officers dealing with drug dealers and the girlfriend of a drug dealer or whoever, whatever else this whole case involves. We cannot have another day of an environment where anti-white lynch mobs can come out into the streets in whole cities like Louisville, hundreds and hundreds of stores, storefronts, government buildings, homes having to be boarded up like a hurricane is coming, because these animals are going to get out into the streets and they're going to set fire to everything, destroy, rape, maim, pillage. We cannot allow these mobs. This is the sort of future that we all are going to be subjected to if we continue to allow anti-whiteism to govern and dominate the lives and our individual lives and the structural entities of our businesses, our government, and the like. This has got to come to an end. The governments in the United States, ladies and gentlemen, the state governments are actually afraid of these individuals. It's time that people like us start getting listened to by our brothers and sisters. And that starts by us raising a voice loud enough and as broadly as we can with the same type of sensibilities that our ordinary brothers and sisters have across the West, and begin speaking to these people about a future where you don't have to worry about mob rule, where you don't have to worry about, hey, it might not be happening in your little town where you live in France or in New Zealand or in the UK yet, but they're coming into the suburbs in the United States. They're coming out to where all the white people have white flighted. That's going to happen where you live. And they're with their bullhorns and they're demanding that your flags of your country be taken down, that you're flying out front. So all of those, like Hector was just talking about, the regular CivNat types that are just abstractionists, all of those folks in New Zealand, they're coming for you. The day is very short for you. It doesn't matter how abstractionist you are, how much anti-whiteism you villainy signal. They're going to show up at your door, and the fact that you're a Westman, man or woman, will be all they need to come after you for what they would say is a retribution. And that's living inside the anti-white narrative. We're going to have to put our foot down, ladies and gentlemen. I live outside Washington, D.C. I don't know where you live, but it's coming soon for you. Sooner or later, it's coming, and we got to take steps to put an end to it.
Excellent take there. I think what we're seeing here, again, is some incredible double standards with this COVID thing. I know for sure that if these riots in the States end up spilling over here into the UK again, there will be no £10,000 fines for the people organising these riots. There will be no £200 fines for people there not wearing face masks. There won't be £3,200 fines for anyone not wearing face masks who are going to the riots or the protests or whatever you call them on cross-country trains. These people will get away with it. But any patriots arranging events will have to be careful, because this will be a law that will be selectively applied. We've already seen police brutality, people being attacked by police officers on trains. It's absolutely disgusting. And the idea that they are going to start recruiting thugs from the population to go around waving batons in people's faces for not wearing masks or allegedly breaking one of these draconian rules, it's absolutely ridiculous. Now, I'm not somebody who often talks about the economy, because I'm not somebody who believes that GDP should be our God. But what we're seeing now is just the wholesale destruction of every small business in the country. But we're also seeing something far worse. We're seeing major measures being taken to eliminate cash as a form of legal tender. And I think that is something that's very worrying. The idea that we're going to be forcibly vaccinated, the idea that cash is going to disappear, the idea that they're going to track and trace you. On Sunday morning, we went out, we had to do some shopping at a particular store. We went to two different places that basically enraged us, and we walked away without actually going in, because at one place we were told we couldn't sit inside. Well, if you've got a small child and you're being told to sit outside in the cold, that's a no-go. And at the other place we were told that if we were going to get breakfast, we had to download something onto our smartphone to trace us. Well, that isn't happening. You know, I feel like busting out my Nokia 3210 so I can tell them to you know, where they can go and stick it. But this is all looking very, very grim. And I think if we don't push back, if we don't make a stand now, it may well be too late in the future, because it's much, much easier to defend your rights than it is to fight for rights that have already been taken away. And I think this is coming to a point now where something has to be done. And there is the very real prospect that all future political gatherings, all future rallies, conferences, marches could be outlawed by the government. And that's just unbelievable. You've got a political party in power using this legislation to ban other groups and parties from organizing to gain power. And I think if they run this through into spring, there is the very real chance of elections being postponed again. And again, to me, that is absolutely scandalous. Now, this is a question for both Hector and No White Guild, but we'll start with you, Hector. You've got elections coming up, haven't you? Do you want to tell us a little bit about those elections, and what do you think, or do you think there is any chance of COVID delaying those elections?
Well, the election's already been delayed because of COVID. It was meant to happen last week, but it's happening in October now. basically, just on the topic of Breonna Taylor as well, her boyfriend was a drug dealer, not even just a drug addict. So this person was, you know, I guess you would call them part of the game. And, you know, the apartment got raided by the police and she was unfortunately killed in the crossfire. Don't know the full story of what went on there, but, you know, you just sort of have to wait for that thing to come out. But on the elections in New Zealand, basically, I call these New Zealand elections probably the least interesting elections in human history. You've got two centre-right or centrist parties, one centre-right, one centre-left. And these parties are just so similar on pretty much everything that there's no point paying attention to it. You've got the Labour Party that wants to put up taxes on the top 2% by a percentage point or so. And then you've got the National Party, which wants to lower taxes slightly on all sort of social issues and all sort of on issues of COVID and all that sort of thing. They are extremely similar and it's very hard to point out major differences between these two parties this election. But also in New Zealand, we do have the MMP system. So it is possible for minor parties to get into parliament. But as has shown, we've got our nationalist parties or kosher nationalists, whatever you want to call them. They're very fractured. They're not really going to get anywhere. It's a very uninteresting election. You've got the New Conservative, which are one of our more sort of kosher right parties. And then you've got Advanced New Zealand, which is another kosher right party. You've just got a billion of them. I mean, it's just going to go nowhere. It's a very uninteresting election. And I mean, yeah, I mean, there's no real point of I just don't understand what draws people to these two parties.
I also find your Prime Minister absolutely obnoxious. And I think what she's done in New Zealand, especially with the gun grab, was absolutely disgusting. She has done nothing but made bad decision after bad decision and taken away people's rights, their right to bear firearms, their right to move freely, their right to discuss certain issues. And when I saw her wearing a hijab, I found it hilarious. I always think it's so funny when you see these so-called feminist icons then donning non-white symbols of submission. It's absolutely hilarious. They think that staying at home, looking after children, cooking a hearty meal for their husband is the ultimate form of submission. Yet then they'll go out, cover their face and bow their heads to men from other cultures who really know how to make women submit. And it just fries my head. But do you have any takes on that before we go over to Jason?
It is a bit of a joke, isn't it? I mean, well, it was all just posturing. I have a feeling that whole thing might have just been for the international media because that wasn't particularly popular here. I mean, people say Jacinda's a joke. I mean, our opposition leader is just as big a joke, if not a bigger joke. our entire parliament right now is a complete joke. We've literally got a Chinese communist spy in parliament as well. That's an interesting story. Basically, you've got this guy that worked at a spy school in China to spy on people. And he came to New Zealand, lied on his visa when he came to New Zealand, and eventually became a parliamentarian because he had ties to the Chinese community, whatever that means. And it turns out the guy's a Chinese communist and a literal spy, and he refused to stand down. Our parliament is a complete joke.
What a complete joke in New Zealand. The same story across the entire Western world. Talk about the theater that they put on for us. You have these. The thing is that both of these sides are genuine individuals who genuinely are fighting against each other. And in most cases, they really dislike each other, sometimes hate each other. But they all want their spot at the trough, and they're all willing to serve the anti-white powers that be. But it's not just that. It's that they've all been infected with an anti-white ideology that drives them to behave this way as well, that drives them to villainy signal anti-whiteism the way they villainy signal that as well. The thing that's important is when you have an individual, it's a machine, it's a human being, whatever it is, once you've programmed it with a set of ideas by which it is operating, the only difference for a human being is when we take over consciously, which is what we demand of you with Go Free, very rarely happens in a human being's life that we take over with our conscious mind. Once you've programmed that individual and you put them in a certain environment, they will behave an expected way. And that is the 200 IQ level of control that the anti-whites exercise over us. And we were just talking about a moment ago, and I wanted to mention to Mark's point about in the United States, we have also what are called contact tracers. And I imagine we're going to be seeing that across the West. It's another opportunity that as soon as, I think we mentioned it here, Mark, as soon as COVID-19 was being used as a means by which to lock people down in their homes, to prevent them from opening their businesses, to prevent you from living your life so that you go crazy locked indoors. We have this record-setting suicide among the young, drug abuse, self-harm among the young, escalating everywhere. We saw immediately that in this country, the individuals who are call themselves Democrats, they immediately moved to implement a program, and they did, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me right now, but there was something outrageous, like $1 billion U.S. tax dollars set aside for this contact tracing program. I believe it was coming under or was part of something initially called the HEROES Act or something of this nature. And this this money was set aside. Many millions have already been dispersed. And in the state of New York, they are already applying law to the powers of the contact tracers. So that if a contact tracer, somebody who doesn't even have to have a high school education, they can have what is considered in the United States the equivalent of GED. And I believe that's as much education as you need. And of course, the majority, the vast majority of these folks are radical anti-whites. And they get paid very good number. I forget what the sum was, maybe something like $17 an hour. And they're trained in order to surveil. They're trained in order to be able to go through your phone. They're trained in order to be able to follow you around. And then they do that. And when they come to you, at least in the state of New York, and this has happened in the city proper, New York City, and they say, we want your phone. We know that you were at a restaurant where somebody had COVID-19. We want to look at your phone to see where else you've been so that we can see everybody else that you may have come in contact with. Individuals who have refused to turn their phones over and therefore all of their personal life to these scumbags, obviously the majority of them, there'll probably be some good people in that mix as well, certainly ones that can't get a job right now. And how alluring is it to all of those who are unemployed to get this like $17 an hour paycheck to follow people around, and that's all you have to do? Of course, you're going to see a lot of people showing up to that. But then when they refuse, the courts have stepped in and said, look, if you refuse, here is what the punishment is going to be for you. So there are legal ramifications. This is what the anti-whites would like to do across the United States. And rest assured, if they do it in the United States, they're going to be doing it everywhere else in the world. This is why, fortunately, circling back to this discussion about elections, the election in the United States is not being postponed. It is moving forward. And finally, it seems like some of these Republicans are getting a bit of a backbone. And I think that's because so many patriotic Americans, white patriotic Americans by far and large, are finally pressuring these people saying, look, you're finished. If you don't move forward with the nomination and confirmation, you are finished. If this election doesn't take place, you are finished. We will never vote for you again. These people are seeing the writing on the walls for them. They're not white positive, but it does mean that we can push them to do things that will benefit us. But I'll pass it back so we can keep the show moving right along.
Well, let's go on to some good news, because we often talk about things which are a bit negative, but we do have a good news story tonight. And this comes from a place in Wales. I'm probably going to mispronounce the name of the place. It's called Penly. I think that's how it's pronounced. If I said that wrong, I'm sure somebody in the chat will be very, very quick to correct me. Now, what's happened there is it's a very small community. There's only about 800 people who live there, but there is a military base there, and they are trying to move, I believe, around 250 so-called asylum seekers into the military base in that village, and the public aren't having it. The public are standing up. The people who live in that village are coming out. They are... apparently, it's pronounced Pen Alley. So I got that wrong, as I thought I would. Now, people are coming out and normal people. This isn't driven by groups like Patriotic Alternative or other groups in the UK. These are just normal people who want to live in an area that isn't flooded with migrants. Now, I'm sure by this point that, apparently the area is now being targeted by hard right extremist groups from across the UK. That's what the press are saying. But that actually isn't the case. This is normal people standing up for themselves and standing up against this kind of thing. And I think this is very important because, again, we're seeing another massive sea change in the mentality of people all over the UK. Normal people going out, blocking the road and trying to prevent asylum seekers being housed in their area is absolutely fantastic. And we do actually have a question on Entropy about this, which I'm going to answer now because it'd be a logical time to answer this question. It's from Britnat Adam, and he says, given that the government seem to be turning barracks into migrant camps, what do you think of the notion that they have run out of hotel space? I find this a worrying prospect. Well, I'm going to answer that. Yes, I do think it's a worrying prospect, and I think they're housing them on barracks so that they can basically protect them, keep them out of the public's eyes. People won't see them as much if they're on military grounds. People won't have the right to go and report or investigate what is being done. I think there's many reasons they're doing this, but I don't think it's a good sign. And I think that over the next few years, especially as this COVID lockdown persists, the government are going to use that lockdown to bring in hundreds of thousands of migrants whilst we're all locked in our homes. Now, you might remember earlier this year in the UK, the press widely reported that at the peak, 15,000 people a day. That doesn't mean 15,000 people a day every day for the whole year have been coming into Britain this way. But at its peak, 15,000 migrants a day were entering Britain whilst we were all in lockdown. And I think that's very telling. I think it's very telling that at a time when we're having our rights taken away, whilst we're being told not to leave our homes, whilst we're basically under house arrest, our country is being invaded on an unprecedented level. Now, Hector, what do you think of the people of Penally standing up for themselves? Do you see anything like this down under in either Australia or New Zealand? And have there been cases of local people in New Zealand standing up against mass immigration?
Yeah, it's great to see this community-based response to mass immigration and the movement of refugees. I will agree that I think that it's not really that they're running out of hotel spaces because there's no tourists around, no one can travel. It is totally to keep it out of the public's eye because you have all these sort of grassroots activists and people reporting on the mass movement of people across the channel. In New Zealand, we fortunately don't have the same sort of refugee crisis of boat people coming around. We do have mass migration, however, legal migration. So basically, you've got people coming over from China, India, this, that, the other, to buy property, to work and depress wages, all that sort of thing. And there's been a little bit of sort of community-based pushback against that. I believe a couple of years ago, there was a Chinese person that wanted to buy a farm, and that farm had some sort of bushwalk or something that used to have public access to it, but this guy wanted to cancel all that sort of thing. And there was a community-based pushback against that. You had small acts of sort of activism, people screwing with his locks and filling it up with construction foam, all that sort of thing. So you do get that here, but it is a little bit lacking. But as with Action Zealandia, what we want to do is rebuild that white consciousness and racial consciousness of white people via our public activism and community building. And as we sort of do that, the rest will sort itself out as white people start standing up for themselves and have a community where we all care about each other and don't just care about money and selling off farms to Chinese people or this, that, the other.
Jason, what do you think about what's going on in Penally? And have you seen anything similar to this in the United States? I know that your southern border has been under constant attack. In fact, the southern border for America is probably worse, probably sees more illegal immigration attempts than any other border the world over. I mean, it's basically a daily flood, isn't it? But do you see people in America standing up to this? Because at one point, independent militias were beginning to form to patrol the border. So there is actually some degree of southern pushback. How's that going? And do you think it had any effect?
Well, the individuals who actually went out there, and this has happened several times, my gosh, maybe as far back as 15 years ago, individuals were going out, especially where there were private property that bordered Mexico, and they would have friends out, they would keep an eye on the border, and then the United States government would go in and charge them all for doing so, and some of them went to prison for doing so. Some of them went to prison for citizen arresting, which is legitimate in the United States, most states. I don't know exactly the laws, I'm sure, vary from state to state, but citizens arrest certainly for somebody crossing the border. And then, of course, you have the individuals from time to time, these drug lords in Mexico will fire across the border at ranchers, at Americans, certainly at the border patrol that are out there. And essentially, it is a sieve. It is a sieve where there are pockets of wall, where there are pockets of fence, where there are pockets of surveillance. And then there are great spots where there is none of that. It is clearly intentionally kept open, because we know that it is entirely possible to create a border that no one can cross. It's called the 38th parallel. And the only people that ever get across the 38th parallel are those who are given aid by the governments, and they're told exactly where they can tread and where they cannot tread. It is a very complex strip of land to be able to cross. We are seeing, indeed, a growing number of individuals, and it's sort of, this is how we need to view all of our brothers and sisters in all of our countries. Remember, one nation, many countries. That's who and what we are as Western kind. It is like seeing a person who is rousing from sleep, and their vision hasn't returned to them yet, and maybe their hearing isn't very good, and they're groping in the darkness of their world, trying to put an end to all that is inflicting the harm. They don't understand where the harm is coming from. They don't know why it's happening. They don't know who could possibly be behind it. They don't know how to speak about it. We have all of those answers, and that's why we need to be getting to them now. We are the ones that they're going to be ready and willing to listen to, more so now than any ever before. But we see we're seeing groups of people in different towns pushing back. Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, there are stories. Even in California, there are white Californians who are, God bless them, who are trying to push back against the lunacy there. For example, we just had this very big story in California, where they just give away taxpayer money to any person who votes for a living, essentially any anti-white person who votes for a living, to the tune of almost $4 million now, and several hundred thousand dollars in cash to individuals who were just saying, "Well, I'll just apply for an unemployment," because the standards have now been dropped. And we're seeing that we can talk about things like where the standards for getting these things. We can talk about things like where they're going to be moving in. The anti-white billionaires are going to move in swarms of non-white people. Most of them are going to be anti-white. All of them are going to have biospirits that are incompatible with the biospirit inside all of us, and therefore radically change our environments and lead to a cultural arms race and then balkanization in our countries. That's what we need to stop. But we see that there are all of these, and this is what Hector was just mentioning. We got this system where you have this cottage industry of this legal creation of documentation to bring people in. They hire lawyers of various stripes, and they say, "Well, here's all the proper paperwork. Here's what you're." Mark, we have talked about these videos where they're actually train the anti-white non-whites coming into our countries exactly what to say to the individuals that they're going to meet with when they get into our country, so that they are immediately given asylum or immediately given some sort of status. And we all, especially you all in the UK, have seen these videos where you see these 5-star hotels. We got it going on here in the United States as well. where they went up in the 5-star hotels and they're knocking on the door and they're saying, who's paying for your spacious abode here? Right. And then they shrug their shoulders. I guess you guys are. In the United States, 5-star hotels, they set up meth labs. They set up meth labs in the 5-star hotel rooms that the likes of all of us here couldn't afford one day in. And that is what's happening as a consequence. All of these folks that we're talking about in these towns, these villages, even they're mentioning in the live chat right now that the couple who was just murdered, by the way, in the United States, was it Ohio? The husband and wife and the little son was with him. They decided they changed the flat. They knew they were in a bad area. They had to get out of that area. And instead of taking off down the road, because at that state, they would be jeopardizing other people's, worried about other people's lives, something that's totally white, that wherever you go around planet Earth, you're going to find white people worried about other people and how well or bad off they are. The reason why they couldn't pull out, even though they knew they were in the bad area, is because the trailer lights weren't working, the hitch lights weren't working, and they were afraid someone might run into the back of the trailer. So they decided, well, we've got to work on this. And what ended up happening, two anti-white, non-white animals showed up, mugged these people, and then attempted to murder them all because they're white. The wife dead there on the scene, the 6-year-old little boy hiding in the cab of the truck gives his shot father the phone to call for help to try to save, asking, why did they shoot my mommy? Our people are sick of it so much to the point that you see these religious communities like Mennonites and Amish are finally getting out into the streets. How much more does it take? This shows you the level of harm being inflicted on Western kind. When these pacifist communities that would, as far as our mark, the kind of people that when we came in, we were the juniors too, and now we're climbing up on their shoulders, they would say, these groups of people, they'll never stand up. They'll never stand up and defend themselves. They're quicker to throw themselves on their backs and their legs wide open for anything the anti-whites want to do. Well, now even these people are getting fed up. This is fantastic news. And it means that we need to get active as all hell to getting our messages out to these people so that they are not that blind guy groping through the dark, that deaf man groping through the dark of his world, wondering how to put an end to it, but instead has the lucid sight of the year 2020, 2020 vision finally, and can see the world for exactly what it is and know exactly what to do as a consequence. I pass it back.
Thank you, Jason. Now, let's move on to something slightly different. I saw this in the news today and I thought it'd be interesting to get everyone's perspective on this and also to find out what's going on in New Zealand with similar issues to this. So I'm just going to do a quick screen share. Christian School Secretary 44 was sacked over Facebook post slamming LGBT lessons for young children and not her religion, governor tells tribunal. A Christian secretary was sacked by a school because she shared Facebook posts criticizing LGBT lessons to young children, not because of her religious beliefs, an employment tribunal has heard. Kirsty Higgs, 44, was dismissed for gross misconduct by Farmers School in Fairford, Gloucestershire, last year after sharing two posts to around 100 people in a network. She is seeking £56,000 in damages at a Bristol employment tribunal after senior staff allegedly branded her a Nazi right-wing extremist. The posts raised concerns about relationship education at the mother of two's son's Church of England primary school, which was to teach the No Outsiders in Our School program. The No Outsiders in Our School program is a series of books on teaching the Equality Act in primary schools. And this is the post. Please read this. They are brainwashing our children. On November the 7th, the government consultation into making relationships education mandatory in primary schools and relations and sex education mandatory in secondary schools closes, which means, for example, that children will be taught that all relationships are equally valid and normal. What a joke. So that same-sex marriage is exactly the same as traditional marriage and that gender is a matter of choice, not biology. So it's up to them what sex they are. At the same time, it means that expressing and teaching fundamental Christian beliefs relating to the creation of men and women in marriage will in practice become forbidden because they conflict with the new morality and seen as indoctrination into unacceptable religious bigotry, which means that freedom of belief will be destroyed, with freedom of speech permitted only for those who toe the party line. We say again, this is a vicious form of totalitarianism aimed at suppressing Christianity and removing from the public arena. And then it says here, in one Facebook post, Mrs. Higgs urged people to sign an online petition against making relationship education mandatory. In another, she shared an article about the rise of transgender ideology in children's books in American schools. One anonymous Facebook friend of Miss Higgs complained in October 2018 to the school where she worked as a pastoral assistant. Mrs. Higgs, who posted under her maiden name, was suspended by the school's head and, following a disciplinary process, was sacked. Well, you can read the rest of that article yourself, but I think you get the idea. This lady was reported by one person and she was sacked for saying she didn't agree with something going on in the schools. Now, I obviously don't agree with this. I think teaching children that all relationships are equal is nonsense. I think gender is a matter of biology. It's not a matter of choice. You don't choose your gender. That is insanity. But for this woman to lose her job for expressing her opinion is absolutely insane. And if anyone else had lost their job for expressing an opinion, especially if they'd expressed some kind of bizarre opinion about legalizing child porn or forcing whites to feel guilty for merely existing, they would be heavily compensated or given their role back with extra benefits and probably a book deal for their alleged hardship. Now, I find this absolutely disgusting. I hate to see stories about LGBT material being pushed in schools because I know just how damaging that is to young minds. These people are trying to brainwash our children, but they're not just brainwashing them. They're trying to mentally damage them. They're trying to open Pandora's box so children are aware of things they should never be aware of. And then those children often act on those things. I've actually done a video about this. It's on BitChute. And it talks in quite a lot of depth about how what are known as peer-to-peer sexual assaults are increasing dramatically in schools because children are being taught about things they don't know. They go out, they are naive, they are curious, they try to investigate these things, they end up sexually assaulting each other. This is child abuse on an industrial scale. And I stand by this woman. She didn't deserve to be sacked. In fact, she deserves to be given a medal. She deserves a knighthood for her services to the people for standing up against this kind of degeneracy. But I would wager that this kind of evil isn't something that is just confined to the UK. And we often have a lot of guests on this show from all over the world, from quite a lot from America, in fact. And one of the interesting things is that this isn't just something that we see in the UK. It's not something we just see in France or Germany or America. These very same attacks are happening in any European country or any country founded by Europeans. But we've never had anyone on from New Zealand before. So, Hector, what's your experience of this sexual brainwashing in schools?
Well, it's interesting. We talked about the cultural exports of New Zealand earlier being cook the man some eggs, but then you look into the cultural exports of the United States and it seems to be this weird transgender homosexuality type thing. I mean, I believe this was a Christian school as well, and I believe that the Bible is quite clear on homosexuality. And the fact that she expressed this opinion in a private group, I believe, and someone pretty much snitched on her and dobbed her in, and she got fired for her job. It seems like that doesn't even seem to line up with any sort of labor laws as well. I mean, how can you fire someone over a Facebook post? It doesn't make any sense. But basically, you do have that all over the West, unfortunately. It comes from America and the UK, and especially over the Anglosphere. It just slowly spreads. And also outside the Anglosphere, you've got Hollywood, you've got BBC and all that pushing all these homosexual stuff. And it is in schools, and it's unfortunate that they're indoctrinating children. It sort of is like our enemies are indoctrinating children. What are we supposed to do? Are we meant to, if we start talking about the white well-being and white community and white racial consciousness to children, people will start calling us all sorts of names, saying we're brainwashing people and all that sort of thing. but our enemies have been doing that for decades. It's just very, very strange. And I believe that we actually do need to start talking to our kids about this sort of stuff. And you should definitely should not be fired for expressing an opinion against the mass degeneracy that would have been, you know, completely fine to talk about not even 5 years ago. So it just shows how quick things are accelerating.
Jason, obviously, a lot of this does come from the United States. I always feel that if there's some form of degeneracy being pushed in the West, it's usually trialed first in America. And the more effective it is at damaging white people in the US, the quicker it's peddled out to the rest of the world. And unfortunately, because Britain is another English-speaking country, it is often the first to get this poison straight from America. People always used to say, if America sneezes, Britain catches a cold. Well, if America has a new form of degeneracy, it is usually Britain that is forced to eat that filth first and foremost. So what do you think about this? And have you seen this in America? And what do you think the next stage of this is going to be? Because I've seen this happening in America. We saw the Drag Queen Story Hour in America, and that soon came over the Atlantic here to Britain. But what do you think the next stage of this will be? And have you seen the next stage of this already? Or is it something that you would like to make a prediction about?
Well, I underscore everything you just said. One thing I would just say, not for us, because we know what we're saying here, but for those who are coming over, many millions of our brothers and sisters are going to be coming over and listening to the things we have to say so that they can get out of this sort of anti-white degeneracy. And that is that for them, again, not for us, we know what we're saying. But when we say that something is coming from America, words are important, and they will conclude that there's something about America that is the problem. When America is inside of every single Westman around planet Earth, there's no getting away from it. It's Western civilization. It's in your heart. It's in your biospirit. It's in you. You recreate it wherever you go. What's coming out of America is coming out of America to the rest of the West, because America is the superpower of the world. And the anti-whites run everything here the way they run everything everywhere else. They dominate. There's no absolute control in human dynamism, but they nonetheless dominate things. And of course, the printing of the currency has a lot to do with why that is the case. So what we see here in the United States is, and this is also another thing where folks go wrong, and I think it's important that we talk about things in a mature way, so that all of these new vagues, brothers and sisters coming over, don't think that they've stumbled upon, you know, another Alex Jones scenario here. The anti-whites, they don't have your average anti-white, or the anti-whites affecting these sorts of outcomes or facilitating these sorts of outcomes. They don't have your average anti-white some sort of grand scheme where they say, well, this step and then this little step. They push as far as they can to victimize us, as law and public opinion, public tolerance will allow them wherever they are. This is why we have seen in different cities and in different decades, there have been this massive spikes where things have just gotten absolutely as horrific as we as Westmen can imagine them to be. And then there's slowly a pulling back of that. What ends up happening is an effect of the context, and that is incrementalism. And the incrementalism that has taken place has brought us to the point where, and this is something that is natural for the human animal, whether you believe we have an immortal soul that it lives inside an animal body nonetheless. And so it is subject to the same sorts of pressures and urges and the like that any animal is subjected to. And that is that we see that they have been pushing as long as they can to bring about harm, not a coordinated, brilliant plan of this is going to bring about, never say that this is going to bring about their utopia, never say that this is, there's nothing that is beautiful or wonderful about what they're trying to do. It is all just the infliction of harm. So it's one step after the other. Now, as far as I'm concerned, sexuality shouldn't be discussed at all in an educational, a school environment, certainly a public school environment. This should be something that is left up for parents to share with their children, for their loved ones, their elders to talk about with their children. It should not be a subject at school. And what ends up happening, what we have seen in the United States, and I'm sure we have these anecdotal, I can give an anecdotal example, but we've seen the data, which is what really matters, is that the anti-whites come to us incrementally to inflict this harm, and they say, well, we have this percentage of out of wedlock pregnancies, we have this percentage of STDs, and we want to lower this percentage, so we're going to start talking about sex at, say, like with the kids at like 17 years old, and then a few years later it's at 15 years old, and this is all heterosexual sex. And what ends up happening, we see then, is the numbers skyrocket for pregnancies. The numbers skyrocket for STDs. Why? Because the kids had no interest or little interest. And they were also being taught these mores that were brought down from generation after generation, which had survived the test of time, essentially the scientific method, and enabled us to produce harmonious, calm, law-abiding societies and families that raise happy children and the like. And so they have gone as low as they can go with that in the infliction of the harm. I mean, we have it in the states all the way down into the elementary school grade levels, telling them about sex. And so then the next thing was to talk about other sexual preferences, other sexual desires that people might have. So for their same sex, so male to male, female to female. And then once they've done that, then they move on into the next thing that they think. Now, this is for the harm of civilization. This is the purpose behind this. There are individuals out there who might be attracted to, you know, who might be a male attracted to a male, female attracted to a female, that could live out their lives as productive members of our community without ever trying to burn down Western civilization, without ever using their what they desire sexually to be their identity as a person. You know, it is just one other part of their life that they share with their partner somewhere in their bedroom. And we don't have to know, society, the public square doesn't have to know any more about it. But what it has ended up happening is the anti-whites have weaponized that sexuality and have ended up usurping much of the leadership and actually creating leadership. Why should you have leadership for your sexuality anyhow? And then using those individuals, many of those individuals, to bring about what we see now, which are things like this encouragement of adult and child, which you're asking, Mark, what's the next level? It is the adult and child relationships, which they have already put into law in the state of California, United States, which everybody should remember within the lifespan of your elders was, in the United States, a Republican state. It was a conservative state. It had conservative morals. And because of the mass immigration of non-white peoples who have a very different voting pattern, many of whom are anti-white, have gotten into that state. They have not only turned it blue, but they have turned it into this absolute festering wound on the left coast of the United States, where now they have said, if there's a 10-year gap between adult and child, then that's acceptable. And that is what we're going to see more of. And we will, as a consequence of seeing the anti-whites do that in the United States, Mark, we're going to see anti-whites doing that in New Zealand, in UK, in Germany, and the rest. It's absolutely disgusting. And what's coming after that? Well, I think you all know, once they get the adult-child relationship, it'll be the abuse of animals sexually that will then be permissible, that they'll be pushing in the schools. And it's happening quicker and quicker. And I'll pass it over. I know Hector's got something to say. It's happening quicker and quicker because of the hubris that the anti-whites are now empowered with. Not necessarily at the top. They've always had power, the anti-white oligarchs. But throughout the ranks of anti-whites from top to bottom, with the power they have, with the hegemony they have, they are drunk on the hubris. And they are dispensing with the excuses to do the things they do. They are dispensing with concern for how all of those millions of folks, if you want to know, look at one of these Trump rallies. People are coming out to the tune of millions across the country for these Trump and Pence rallies. They are ignoring all of that, and they are moving headlong into this dark night for them, we hope. Where there is this great rise of our people, the entire body politic, and they say enough is enough. And adult-child relationships, I think, is going to be the camel for so many millions that breaks the straw that breaks the camel's back. But I'll pass it over to hear what Hector and Mark have to say.
Yeah, Hector has something to add here. I'm eager to listen.
Well, I just think the whole thing with sexual identity is bizarre because we live in such a society where white people and Europeans aren't allowed to have an identity based in their own culture and genetics and thousands of years of history, that people have to build these false identities or bizarre identities around, for example, in homosexuality, putting things up your bum. Or anything else like these weird people that worship corporations or any other form of degeneracy, transsexuality, all that sort of thing. I just think it's all stems from the erasure of identity of Europeans being able to be proud in their own identity and their culture and their people. I just wanted to add that.
I've always thought the whole sexual identity thing to be very, very strange. Again, It's another real example of how far we've fallen. We're not allowed to identify as English or British or white or European, but we can identify as, you know, some sort of degenerate, furry, nappy-wearing, homosexual creature. And I have seen these posts where people have gone and found the weirdest identities you could imagine, you know, in the court on chat rooms in the corner of the internet. But all of these things are accepted. And one thing you have to say, I saw a post once about this group of people and they dress up as sort of anthropomorphic foxes or dogs or cats. They call themselves furries, but there's a subsection of these creatures that call themselves baby furs, and they're essentially like fox cubs or puppies, and they dress up as these anthropomorphic baby animals, but where they're called diapers in America, but we call them nappies, and they sort of roll around in their own leavings whilst dressed as this sort of baby animal. Now, I'm sure people in the chat are either sort of disgusted or some will be just sort of laughing at the ridiculous nature of what we're saying. And I understand both of those responses. I understand the disgust, and I understand people who have been pushed to the point where all they can do now is laugh at the madness because it is that insane. But the thing that isn't a laughing matter is that if one of these baby furs, if one of these total degenerate weirdos dressed as a fox cub with a nappy on, was to walk into a media office, was to walk into a government building and start rolling around on the floor in this nappy, defecating there, people would take more kindly to that than if you walked into the same office and declared that you wanted to stand up for the interests of those of European descent and were opposed to the displacement and replacement of those of European descent in their ancestral homelands or the nations they founded. And when you put it in those terms, all of a sudden it's not such a laughing matter anymore. The identity of being a feces-loving, furry, baby creature is actually more legitimate to our enemies than standing up and saying, you know what? I'm proud to be white, I'm proud to be English, I'm proud to be Scottish, I'm proud to be French, I'm proud to be American. That is a pretty telling thing. Anyway, on that particularly odd subject, we are now going to bounce into the Super Chats. And if you haven't had a chance to send a Super Chat, or if you'd like to send a donation, all donations are gratefully received. The entropy details are in the chat below. And all donations go towards a good cause. Remember, those donations are used for things such as the Dover projection that was done on the White Cliffs. That was paid for out of my own pocket. I make sure they all go to a good cause. And obviously, some of them go to my basic costs for doing shows like this and spending as much time as I do working full-time for the cause. So if you would like to make a contribution, if you'd like to help out, please go over to Entropy now, and we are going to go and read some of those, all of those Super Chats. Bailiff Basher gave $3. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, has any attempt been made to get Richard Edmonds from the National Front on board? I see they are still going. Well, the National Front are still going. I know Richard Edmonds. I've met him on many occasions. He is a real gentleman and a scholar. I have enjoyed several of his speeches at different events around the country, and it is great to see him still going. I don't have any animosity whatsoever towards the National Front or the people in it. I do believe Patriotic Alternative is a better vehicle for our people, but I wish the National Front all of the best. JP gave $10. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, love the show. Keep doing God's work. Well, thank you very much. And thank you for the super chat. Junta Mominari gave $5. Thank you very much. And he said, what does the guest think, what does Hector think, about this year's World Economic Forum in Davos, where ASEAN, Southeast Asian equivalent to the EU, talked about a plan for free movement of people. Representatives from Australia and New Zealand wanted to join the free movement bloc. So, Hector, what do you think about the prospective free movement bloc between the Southeast Asian countries and New Zealand and Australia?
Well, obviously, it would be a complete disaster for our people. It seems like we already seem to have mass movement of people between those countries anyway. You have all these people coming in New Zealand, coming here to suppress wages and stuff such as, you know, agriculture, picking fruit, and also other industries such as tech. You have people getting imported to work at tech industries and undermining the local worker on pretty much everything. It was completely free movement of people. It's hard to imagine it getting worse than it already is, but I suppose it always can. And also just on the issue of housing as well, like, we've got a massive housing shortage in New Zealand. Housing prices in New Zealand are probably some of the highest in the Western world compared to wages. I think the median house price in New Zealand is 9 times the median wage, which is completely unprecedented. And if we let mass migration continue, it's just going to suppress wages, increase the price of rent and mortgages, and it won't benefit anyone except the captains of industry and the international capitalists.
Thank you. We do have a non-paid question here, which is very pressing. I'm just going to throw this one out straight away before we get back to the super chats. And remember, if you haven't super chatted yet but want to make a contribution, you can. Norman Bates says, do we attend the anti-lockdown protests on Saturday? Anybody going to the anti-lockdown protests on Saturday that wants PA material to give out, email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com and I will send you a leaflet that you can either print at home or take to a professional printers and get printed. So if you're going to anti-lockdown protests, we do have a anti-lockdown leaflet from Patriotic Alternative. I have been busy on these things. A lot of people don't realize what I get up to all day. People are, well, how can this be a full-time job? Well, when I'm not dealing with people's personal issues, when I'm not dealing with the tiring nature of this movement and the amount of drama it throws up, I spend a lot of time working on videos, working on material for the PA website, and also doing these new leaflets. And of course, there are plenty of other admin processes and bits and pieces that I do behind the scenes. But one thing I've been working hard on is 3 new pieces of literature to go with our existing leaflet, one of which is a white minority leaflet, one of which is a lockdown leaflet, and one which was actually asked for today is a business card. Now, all of these leaflets will be put up in 2 forms. One will be a home printable version, and one will be a version that can be sent to a print-on-demand company. These will all be up shortly. We are just passing them around a number of people to get all the feedback we need. But if you are going to one of these protests, please do email me, and I will send you the leaflet so you can print off a few. And good luck to you. Daniel Lewis gave £20. Thank you very much. Generous donation. And he just said 14. 14 indeed. And thank you for your continued support, my friend. Our good friend Serena JB gave £3. Thank you very much, Serena. And she said, our political class seem to be incompetent and malevolent at the same time. They're the ones who need replacing, not us. Exactly. And I think it is more malevolent than it is incompetent, although I do think there is some incompetence there. Myself and my family went away the other weekend and we saw this incompetence firsthand with the COVID restrictions. We were eating at a chain pub. It was actually a really nice meal, and I had a mixed grill. And from my mixed grill, I made a little mini mixed grill for Sophia, which she really, really enjoyed. And she enjoyed the sausage so much, in fact, she ate an entire sausage to herself, which pleased her immensely, pleased me slightly less, because it meant I was down one entire sausage, which is quite a lot for a very small person. But she really, really did enjoy it. She also enjoyed the chicken. Sadly, by the time she got to the steak, she was a little worn out, I think, and didn't enjoy it quite as much as she should, especially considering I gave her the best cut of my steak. So she had, it was a very nice cut of steak, but she had the nicest part of a very nice cut. But while we were in this restaurant, they designed this elaborate one-way system of walking around the restaurant. So you came in one door and left the other so that people would only move in one direction. And I quizzed the, he was actually the manager, but he was took us to our table. I quizzed him on the point of this, and he said it was very, very important that people kept to this rule. And I said, well, it's not really that important though, is it, mate? Because the toilets are by the door. So everyone who goes to the toilets has to walk the opposite way of the one-way system. And he said, yes, but there's only one set of toilets, so everyone has to do that. So I said, so what's the point of me and my family using the one-way system to exit the restaurant when we've already all gone the opposite way of the one-way system on several occasions to go to the toilet? At which point he was completely stunned, and we realized the whole COVID system was being put together by complete incompetent buffoons who just aren't qualified or just make legislation for the sake of making it. Because a one-way system only works if people are going just in and out. But if people are moving around and have to go to the bar or have to go to the toilet, it's a complete farce. But other than the farcical nature of the one-way system, as I said, it was a relatively enjoyable evening. And Sophia was actually very, very well behaved. And she already knows, as I said, she already knows what she likes. Although one thing that I did make the mistake, I have chocolate protein shakes when I come back from the gym. And she was very, very curious about the chocolate protein shake. So I gave her a small, like a tiny bit on a teaspoon. Now, whenever she sees me having the chocolate protein shakes, she says more, 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 which means she wants it. Although we are working on that. And if she doesn't get what she wants, she stops saying more and starts saying please. And as soon as she says that, that is just such a little melting moment that she does tend to get what she wants if she says please. She's only 14 months, but she seems to be doing very well with language. Junta Molinari gave $3 and said, what do you think about mainstream conservative commentators Glenn Beck, Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, etc., interviewing Matt, I don't know how to pronounce this, Yeglesias's book, 1 Billion Americans, and agreeing the plan to 3 times the US population. Well, actually, somebody sent me something about this the other day. Now, I've heard about this. There is a plan to increase the US population to 1 billion. And people like Glenn Beck, Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, I can only guess what Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin are. Is Glenn Beck one of them as well? Jason? Is he one of the tribe too?
I don't think so. He's just gelded.
Well, this I always find really, again, I've often talked about how things in sci-fi films end up coming true. And this is something like out of Judge Dredd, isn't it? Mega City 1, these giant cities with 500 million people or whatever living in them. And they are talking about America full of 1 billion people. But I did make this very point myself not long ago, when I made a video on increasing GDP, and I said they will keep increasing first world countries' population, because increasing first world country population does mean that there will be increases in GDP, although that only helps the people at the very top. And if you want to make, if you want to watch that video where I explain all this, so I've actually talked about this, Junta Molinari, you've essentially for your $3 super chat, you have been referred to an entire video on this very issue that I made. And people should check that out, the link between GDP and population growth and why these so-called conservatives are so, so eager for this. What do you think, Jason? And Hector, you can follow this up, but I'm going to throw this to Jason first because he's in America. What do you think about this drive for the American population to rise to a billion?
It is absolutely despicable, and the country is being overwhelmingly polluted. You have so many of our white brothers and sisters who consider themselves, and this is why I very often say the spectrum is just Bravo Sierra of right left, because you have so many of our brothers and sisters who, like us, love the environment, want to keep the environment clean. The reason why you have such pollution in the United States, the reason why you have all of the Western countries having the highest carbon footprint or some of the highest carbon footprints on the planet, is because of bringing in people from all of these third world countries, these non-white people who, I'm sure they're all wonderful, but they had a very tiny carbon footprint in their little village where they didn't have electricity, they didn't have the means to purchase every plastic piece of junk from China and the like, and then they didn't drive an automobile, and then you bring them into the United States, for example, and they then suddenly they are on, and when you see, for example, one particular non-white group in the United States has, even though a decent portion of them work, they are something outrageous, like 90-some percent are on some form of public assistance, even though somebody in the house is working. So they're then inundated with all of this cash, inundated with this ability to buy cars. And they also, of course, they get grants instead of loans very often for businesses. And we even see Kamala Harris giving a press conference where she says that she's going to give, her administration or Biden, they get into office, they're gonna set aside more than $1 billion strictly on the basis of race, as they already are doing, but for non-white businesses, owned businesses to be started. This is the kind of thing that on the anti-white side of the spectrum, if you will, that there are many of our brothers and sisters that can be cleaved away from those groups. They can be cleaved away because the environment is important to them. Bambi is important to them. The clean running creek is important to them. The ability to take that walk in the national park and see the wolves and et cetera, that is very important to them because there's something about Western kind, Western man, that puts us in harmony with nature in a way that we just haven't seen it broadly. It does happen individually, but broadly in the non-white communities of the world. And so these individuals, when they hear about things like increasing population from 300 plus a million to a billion or something like this, it would absolutely devastate. It would destroy the natural environment of the United States, not because it's just merely a number of people, but because of all of the things that an individual is able to purchase. That means all of the junk they create, all of the junk that has to be assembled, all of the junk that has to be pulled out of the environment and shipped across the country. That means more vehicles for shipping. I mean, the conversation goes on and on about the destruction that would take place in the country, not the least of which to mention, of course, people like this, these Glenn Beck and the rest, these anti-whites, they're all just anti-whites. They couldn't care less about what ends up happening to all of these just almost countless towns where these white people live in middle America that are not on the slivers of these coasts, where these types of individuals, they jet back and forth primarily to. Of course, there might be an island here or two in the middle of the country that is predominantly anti-white. But this is the kind of conversation we can have with our brothers and sisters to bring them over to our viewpoint, both those who consider themselves on the left and those who consider themselves on the right, who would follow somebody like a Glenn Beck or these others. I can't even remember their names, because we can say to them, look, you think these guys are preaching your viewpoint when in reality they're carrying forward an idea that would absolutely destroy the country we live in now. And I'll pass it back so we can continue the conversation.
Hector, did you want to add something about this rapid population growth?
It's actually sort of interesting that the billion America idea. I don't really know what Ben Shapiro and his gang of kosher conservatives' view on that is, but it could be completely devastating to the environment. America, as it is right now, is pretty much overpopulated. And it's sort of interesting. It leads back to the Big Australia policy, which was floated around by the Labor leader, Kevin Rudd, at the time, which wanted Australia's population to go up to 35 million. Even that was sort of seen as unsustainable and it would be an environmental disaster. And you've got these weird kosher conservatives throwing around an idea that we need to import hundreds of millions of people to the United States just so that these corporations can keep making money at the expense of pretty much everything else, the environment, the people, the worker. It's just unfathomable, and it's a complete, these conservatives just are complete jokes and should be ashamed of themselves for even thinking about these things that would benefit literally no one except the top 1%.
I absolutely concur. Very well said. And please, anyone wants to watch my video about GDP and this, we need more people to grow GDP, please watch that, because it explains in a very, very simple fashion exactly why growing your population to grow GDP hurts everyone but the 1%. And I even did a really, really terrible little animation of people sitting around a table sharing a cake, which illustrates it all in a simple way that I'm sure anybody could understand. It's a very shareable video. The Thin Red Line gave $5 and said, "Hail victory." Well, thank you very much, my friend. Jekatira gave $5. Thank you very much. And he said, "Have you guys heard about the show A Quest for Oys?" I think that's how it's pronounced. It's a children's show for Jays in America. It's about Jayish children becoming radicalist. Andy Worski and Kyla have been covering the episodes lately. It's astonishing how crazy and silly it is. I haven't heard of this, but if anyone has, no, Jason's not heard of it. Hector, have you heard of this?
I cannot say I have. The only sort of Jewish cartoons I know about is, what is it, Big Mouth? I remember there was a couple articles going around saying that was quintessentially Jewish or something like that. But no, I haven't heard of this one.
Okay, thank you. And just to throw this out about Andy Worski and Kyla, I actually did a show with them the other morning. I got up really early on Saturday and we chatted about everything from cuties to gaming to retro gaming to running. Andy Worski is doing really, really well. He's kicked all the drugs. He's on a fitness binge and he is running a half marathon, I think. Yeah, in under an hour and a half, which is elite running time. The quickest I ever ran a half marathon was an hour and 41 minutes. And Andy Worski smashing it in under an hour and a half. That guy is doing really well. Now, he's moving to Portugal, and I've invited him over here to the UK. Next time, when he's in Portugal, next time we do one of those lunacy runs, if we're ever allowed to do them again, I've told him to come over to meet us and to do a bit of exercise with us, because I think he could legitimately win one of those if he's at elite running status. He's in great shape. So it's really good to see him make such a wonderful comeback. Check out his DLive channel. As I say, superb content and a really, really nice guy. For Camaraderie gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, "Good evening, Mark, Jason and Hector. Hector, what are your thoughts?" This is just for you, Hector, this one. He says, "What are your thoughts on nationalism in Tasmania? I was not connected to a passionate sister who is worried about her island's future."
Well, I can't really say I've heard too much about Tasmanian nationalism. But, you know, connecting with nationalists are always a good idea. Just, I mean, well, basically, this I don't know what the state is with Australia. There used to be a couple good groups, such as the Lad Society and Identity Australia, that used to exist, but it seems they've all sort of faded away in the past year. So we would actually be very interested to have a connection to some Australian nationalist group. And if Australian nationalists are keen on networking, they could do it via us. Send us an email on our website or via Twitter or anything else. But yeah, I mean, just nationalist connecting is always a good thing. We have to sort of get outside of that online space. You have to start connecting in the real world and building that real world community. And just on the subject of, just on the previous one about Andy Worski, it sounds, I don't know too much about him, but it's really good that it sounds like he's on this sort of self-improvement path. That self-improvement is massively important. You don't want to be doing drugs. You don't want to be drinking massive amounts of alcohol. But yeah, it sounds like he's going really far down the self-improvement. And I just want to say happy for him. And everyone else should strive to self-improve themselves in whatever way they can.
Thank you. And I just want to add something to that. I try to be as much of a role model as I can. I try to stay fit. I try to be healthy. I try to eat well. I try to try my best to be a good dad. I try to be someone that people can try to emulate in certain ways. But one thing it's always really difficult for me to do is to give advice on things like addiction, on issues like that, because I've never faced them. I've never faced any problems relating to drink or drugs. I mean, I've obviously had the odd crazy night out where I've drank a little too much, but I've never even tried cannabis. I've never used any drugs whatsoever. And I think it's so important when people like Andy Worski step forward and start giving advice, because the fact that they've been through that, the fact they've come out the other side, the fact they've landed on their feet and they are now embracing something far more healthy, I think those people have a really important role to play in helping others who are going through addiction problems or trying to break free from addiction, because those people, they understand the pain. They understand the trials that people face when they're coming away from addiction. And it was really interesting talking to Andy, because he was talking about how he broke free and the little steps he took to ensure that he broke that cycle of addiction. And I think it's really fascinating talking to him. And at some point, you know, I would like to get him on this show and maybe talk to him about addiction and how to help people out of it. Now, there are many types of addiction. Obviously, there's gambling addiction, there's substance addiction, and there's also addiction to other things like pornography. I say to people that I get a lot of emails from those who want advice, but one of the largest sectors of advice that I end up giving is about porn addiction. A lot of young men in the West are hopelessly addicted to pornography. And when we had Roosh V on the show, he spoke about his personal experiences with sex addiction and porn addiction. And I thought that was a really good show too. So yeah, I think it's really great that Andy's pulled himself out of this, but it's even better that he's using his experience to help others who are having a tough time. So well done to Andy, and keep up the good work, mate. Alex May, The Thin Red Line gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, I am happy to donate a little. I know you spend it well. Well, thank you very much, my friend. It's very much appreciated. Alex May gave £10. Thank you very much. And she said, one activist down in Kent was talking about setting up a homeless tent city outside the Napier barracks where illegals are being housed. What are your thoughts on this kind of activism? Worth it? I think things like that are a very good idea because they make a very, very powerful point. And that point is obviously that our government has the money and the resources to house illegal immigrants, but is happy to leave decent people out on the streets. And when it's coming to Christmas, I think that hits home even more with normal people. I am all for different homeless outreach programs. There is one large caveat to that. I know that some people do choose to live on the streets. I actually know a guy who used to be a nationalist, and he chooses that transient lifestyle because it suits him better. And people have reached out to him. I've let him stay at my house from time to time, but he always goes back to living on the streets. But there are people out there who are in genuine need and are there through no fault of their own, who aren't there through choice, who are looking for help. And I think it is very important for the nationalist community to support those people. And I think a protest like that would be very, very good. And if something like that did go ahead and those people did want our help, it's the kind of thing that I think our activists should go and assist with. And I'd be happy to produce a special leaflet for that. So fantastic idea. And I think that is something that would show up the government's double standards very, very well. And this is something else. When I see these asylum seekers in these 4-star hotels living the life of luxury at our expense, but we haven't got money for our own homeless or people in need, it makes me absolutely sick. And, you know, it's another thing that I think motivates people to fight. I mean, my greatest motivation is obviously my daughter, but I do think shining the light on this huge hypocrisy and inequality is very, very important. So thank you very much for that super chat. Damien Demento gave £15. Thank you very much. And he said, "Evening all, I was watching Dr. Dutton before this stream, and he mentioned that soldiers sign up to the army to protect their kin, generally a consequence of a homogenous gene pool. What do you think that could mean for your respective countries, bearing in mind the ongoing demographic shift?" Well, I'm very interested in this topic because I've fallen out with people before who've said the army would never turn their weapons on the British people. I think they would. And I think the army is now undergoing two changes. And I was actually discussing this just the other day with an ex-member of the forces. And he was saying to me that these two changes the army are undergoing are very, very important because they're preparing the army so that the army can be used against the British people. Now, the first of these changes is that the army, and I've actually done a video on this as well, the army is now being reorientated so that white people who sign up are being screened for political correctness. Anyone that as much says that they're patriotic are being told that they're not welcome in the army. If you try to join up and you say it's because I'm a patriot, because I love my country, because I'm a nationalist, because I love my flag, you are being pushed to one side. They do not want patriots or nationalists in the army. They are screening for that, and they are selecting amongst the officer class the most politically correct, the most multicultural, the most progressive to advance up the totem pole. So that's the first change. The second change is that they are recruiting more and more soldiers from ethnic minority backgrounds. They are diversifying the army as quickly as possible. Now, I believe this is all being done for one reason. It's being done because at some point or another, the army are going to be used against the British people. And when I say the British people, I don't mean British citizens. I mean the indigenous people of Britain. And the two are very different. British citizens are people who hold a passport but might not have an ancestral claim to these islands. The indigenous people of Britain are the descendants of the people who have been here for tens of thousands of years. Now, the army will be used against us. They may well be used against COVID protesters, people protesting the lockdown. And because we are still a majority white country, asking white people who are patriotic or who are nationalists or who love their people and their country to fire on their own people might be a difficult call. And many of those people might put their guns down. However, asking people who are politically correct or asking people who are more loyal to the system than they are to the people would be a lot easier. And also asking people from different ethnic groups to fire upon white people might be a much easier sell than asking white people to fire on white people. And I think that goes, I think what I've said goes hand in hand with what Dr. Dutton said. I think it's very dangerous, and watching our army being turned into this politically correct multicultural force will have much the same results as it had when our police force was turned into that politically correct multicultural force. And obviously the result of that was the police turned a blind eye to the grooming scandal. So what are the army going to be used to do? Well, I don't know just yet. I've wagered what I think it will be, but one thing's for sure, it won't be good for the indigenous people. Jason and Hector, we'll start with you, Hector. What do you think about this? Do you think the military or the armed forces in Western nations will be at some point used to pacify white people and to institute more draconian or tyrannical measures against whites?
Well, that's the thing. With our current liberal societies, you're not allowed to have a military that is patriotic, cares about discipline, cares about their people and the well-being of their country, because our current economic, socio-economic system is completely against those ideas. So they sort of have to bring the military in line with those ideas. And that means, you know, screening people and bringing in ethnic minorities and fast tracking them to officer positions and NCO positions, all that sort of thing. Because our military now is what, just mercenaries that fight wars in the Middle East. There's there hasn't been a justified war in over a century, and it will be used against its own people, or the native people, or patriots, or whatever you want to call us, because it's already happening with the police, as you said. If you think that the police, you think the police are going to come and crack down on nationalists, but the army isn't, it's just silly. Of course they are. It's happened in the past. You've had the Austrian Empire used to have units of ethnic minorities come oppress other ethnic minorities within their empire. And it will happen with our own militaries as well, as you let in these ethnic minorities and everyone else. Oh, that's my part.
Yeah, I'll tack onto that really quickly. I know. All right, brother. Thank you. I'll tack onto that really quick, as I know we're getting near the end here. And that is that, is Dutton saying that the white soldiers would not fire on and would not attack the their own white population? Is that what he's claiming?
Say is that a lot of people join the army out of a desire to protect their own people. So an ethnically homogenous white military force would find it a lot harder to fire upon white people.
No. That is fabulously incorrect. In the United States, good God, in the United States, we have seen this. Look up the bonus marchers. And after World War I, the United States was, this was late 1930s, 40s. The United States was whatever percent non-white, was almost entirely white compared to what it is today, of course. And these were people who were of the ethnic stock of the rest of the white population here in the United States. And they were soldiers of World War I. They were promised their bonuses. They didn't get their bonuses. They went to D.C. in the tens of thousands. They set up an encampment with their families. And then the government just called on the all-white military to go out there and machine gun them and drive tanks at them. Of course, these didn't even have to be a different ethnicity. Soldiers will obey. Because if they don't obey, then individually they are crushed. How is this not simply understood? You have to have a gravity of center for a soldier or group of soldiers or whatever to rally around. That is a gravity of authority. It's a gravity of moral authority, a matrix of ethics and reciprocity and respected institutions and standards that people can then rally. That's how you get civil wars around the world, because the other side, the contending side or sides, have this pole of gravity. This is, and yes, then to the rest of your point, since it already will happen with people of the exact same group on their own populations, because an individual soldier is just an individual that can find himself executed as a consequence of any sort of rebellion against or refusal to obey orders. That is fabulously wrong. When you add on top of that, what Hector is saying, absolutely, it's even that much easier, I guess, the outcome's the same, to get different ethnicities of the white population to fire on each other. And then naturally, absolutely, when you have different races come in, they've done it in law enforcement and they do it in the military. I'll point this out just to underscore what Mark said really quickly. They are prioritizing, and they have been for decades in the United States, non-white people for a promotion, and they are being pushed all the way up the ranks. They're the ones who are getting in charge, anti-white, non-whites, of course. I'm sure they don't want any non-white person that would be patriotic and say their allegiance is to the Constitution. They won't do such things. They want anti-whites. But I'll also point this out, and I assume the same, and this is it, I assume the same is for the UK and New Zealand, everywhere else, is that in the United States, if you are non-white, you want to come into this country and you want to be able to get a citizenship like this, all you have to do is join the military. You get citizenship, you get the right to vote, you are a green card soldier. And they will be used not only, and are used not only against us to change our voting patterns, but they will be used as the ones who come to your door in the Humvee and say, turn over your firearms, because they have no allegiance to you. They don't feel any connection to the founding fathers of our countries. That is the destiny that awaits us if we don't recapture everything that has been stolen.
I agree. One thing I will say, though, is I think that the armed forces in the West will become less and less effective. They're also talking in the UK about vastly reducing the number of service personnel and replacing large numbers with drones and other military hardware that is essentially largely computer controlled, but piloted to some degree by operatives rather than actually having ground personnel. I think the interesting thing about this is the West's reliance on technology and the West's politically correct nature, and also the multiculturalizing of our armed forces, will lead to a massive reduction in actual competence in the military. And I think nations like Russia and China will certainly be rubbing their hands as that begins to happen, because I believe that Russia and China will continue to use large amounts of troops. They will continue to train those troops using traditional methods for traditional means of warfare. And was there ever an invasion? The fact that Western nations don't have any regular troops or troops that weren't trained to the former high standards that they were known for, I think China and Russia would have a very, very real chance of steamrolling their way through large parts of the West, and certainly through Europe. But I mean, that's a lot of that is just conjecture, and it may well never come to anything like that. But if it did, I don't think European military has what it takes anymore to repel any form of serious invasion. We do have one last question that we're going to throw out there to Hector. It's from Rory Herbert. And he says, what does Hector think of the All Blacks haka dance? And Rory Herbert adds that he likes it himself.
Oh, well, there's nothing really wrong with it. It's part of the native Maori identity. And as a European, I have nothing wrong with other people appreciating their own identity and culture. I mean, it is sort of interesting. It is funny that you have all these white folk and the All Blacks doing it as well, but I guess that's up to them, and it's just sort of it as it is. But it is also a bit, like, you know, commercialized and corporatized as well. I don't really think that's that genuine of a cultural thing. It just seems to be a marketing type thing that goes on. But I mean, yeah, it's all right. It's fun to watch, so nothing really against that.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Well, it's been a packed show. Usually we run a couple of minutes over, but tonight I'm trying to end it more or less exactly the 2-hour mark, because if we don't, we run over on Radio Albion, and that creates problems for Sven and the people watching on Radio Albion. And there's usually about somewhere between 400 and 600 watch on Radio Albion, which is quite interesting, because tonight we've had at peak 1,700 watching here on DLive, 58 watching on Entropy, and as I said, usually there's between 400 and 600 over on RadioAlbion.com. So I estimate the numbers tonight to be, again, well over 2,000 overall, and still good numbers here on DLive, which is fantastic, especially for a new guest. And I think it's really important that PWR keeps with its tradition of inviting new guests onto the show and giving a boost to smaller content creators. And I think Hector has been a particularly fantastic guest tonight. So, Hector, thank you so much for coming on, my friend. And would you like to give yourself a bit of an outro, say a few final words about the situation in New Zealand, about your organization, and where we can find you and how we can contribute to your work?
Thank you. Basically, I'm part of Action Zealandia. We're the largest nationalist movement in New Zealand. That's mainly because we're the only real one that exists. But basically, I'm in part of Action Zealandia. We partake in public-facing activism, banner drops, postering, and also we partake in self-improvement as well. So MMA, hiking, going to the gym, all that sort of thing, giving each other our positive community for that sort of self-improvement to take place. And as we've got that core group of members, which are males between the ages of 18 to 35, but also as hot as yesterday, we've created an official supporters network as well called the Nationalist Support Network, which is the nationalist. It's a network for nationalists to connect in New Zealand and support Action Zealandia and the movement as a whole throughout New Zealand. So this can be through any ways that people see fit. You know, we've got a nice woman that's going to do crafting and knitting for us. We've got people writing articles. We've got people that want to partake in printing. and any sort of skill we're interested in. And if you want to know more about us, we've got our website, actionzealandia.com. And we've also got our own sort of radio show, podcast type thing that goes on weekly called Voices Zealandia. That's on YouTube, BitChute. And we've started a DLive channel as well, Action Zealandia. We're actually planning to do a live stream on election night in New Zealand and give our hot takes on that throughout the entire night on DLive. And yeah, that's pretty much us.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Hector. It's been a real pleasure having you on tonight. Jason, my friend, I hope you've enjoyed the show tonight. And I'm looking forward, as always, to the after party and your other fantastic content. Give yourself a little outro and tell everyone what they've got to look forward to.
Well, the first thing I want to say is a big thank you and congratulations and all the work that you're doing. And thank you for your service to Y Wellbeing, Hector, down there in New Zealand. It is vitally important that we save our brothers and sisters everywhere they are on planet Earth. And it is an honor to serve with individuals like yourself over there on the other side of the world. So thank you so much, brother. And folks can find us over on Tap this coming Friday, I think at 5. And I think he's Charles, the irreplaceable Charles, I think is what he calls himself. And he will be our guest at 5 p.m. on Friday, No White Guilt Channel and Discipline with NWG. You can also hop on over to either of those channels for a short stream right now that I will be beginning after we wrap up, just to celebrate a tiny bit about Crucible finally being available to the public, and that we can begin pushing it out to all of our MAGA brothers and sisters, conservatives, First and Second Amendment types. But I will pass it back to Mark so we can wrap up the show. Our great leader, Mark Collett.
Thank you so much, Jason. It's been a fantastic show tonight, and it's always good to have new guests, as I said earlier. I've really, really enjoyed this last couple of shows. Two new guests and two fantastic shows. The replay of this will, of course, be on BitChute. And if you are on BitChute, you can watch all of my previous videos. They're all there in their uncensored format. And the new one will be added to that list this Friday when I upload my regular video. I just want to say a huge thank you to Hector, a huge thank you to Jason, and a massive thank you to everyone who donated. If you want to make a donation after the show, if you're watching on replay, you can, of course, still make a donation via Entropy. You can write to me at mark@fullofwesternman.com, or you can donate via Bitcoin. And all those who donated tonight, thank you so much. Your donations are gratefully received, and they were very, very generous indeed. But as I say at the end of every show, my biggest thanks goes to this amazing audience. We had, again, about 1,700 people watching live here on DLive and many more elsewhere. This community is so fantastic. It's been an excellent atmosphere tonight in the chat. Some really, really great questions. And I am already looking forward to next week's episode, but I am not sure who will be on. But remember, keep looking forward to episode 75. That is only 3 weeks away. And the guest that night is Dr. David Duke. So that's going to be a really special episode. Anyway, I wish you all the best. I hope you all stay safe during these uncertain times. And I wish you all the best. I look forward to seeing you next week for another episode of PWR. Stay safe, my friends. Have a great night. Goodbye.